With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and today it's been a long time coming, but they're here at last. One of the architects, one of the pioneers of the new wave of British heavy metal, Saxon, lead singer Biff Bifford, is here. Love the fact that Biff is here. We toured with Saxon back in 2013. We had such a blast. We're going to talk about their new record, Thunderbolt, talk about all of the new dates that they're doing in the UK, starting this Friday, February 23rd in Cardiff. If you live in Cardiff in Wales, go check out Saxon. And then on March 13th, they're coming to the States with Judas Priest. This incredible bill starts in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, runs through the end of April. You can get all tickets and information at saxon747.com. That's saxon747.com. Biff Bifford is here, and you'll find out why it's so important for them to keep recording and releasing new albums. They put one out every couple of years. He's talking about the making of Thunderbolt, his favorite songs to play live, the band's first ever tour of the States, supporting Rush on the Moving Pictures tour, what Lemmy and Motorhead did for Saxon all throughout the band's career, the great chicken debate, Fozzy versus Saxon. Where's my chicken? I want chicken. I love chicken. Have you ever seen the movie Spinal Tap? Some of that was based on Saxon, although Biff will deny it to the death. Great, great rock and roll hero, the legendary Biff Byford is here. Let's take it away, Saxon, right now on Talk is Jericho.
Talking here with Biff Bifford from Saxon, but that's your son.
We started.
Good.
The real behind the scenes stuff.
Oh, cool.
Because you wanted to have your son's band and talk about them a little bit. Naked Six.
Yeah.
And they've got some really good tunes. You've asked me to post them for you on Twitter, though I don't think you really understand what I'm doing when I post them.
Well, probably not now.
But how is it for you, being obviously legendary, you know, British heavy metal band for 40-odd years, and now your son's getting into the business? Is it weird? Is it a different world now?
It's not weird. It's good, actually. You know, I mean, they're 19, so they're doing their thing, aren't they? You know,
yeah.
They're trying to bring something new to the pot, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just heard him. You know, he just put some. He looks like he's just walked out the 60s. You know?
Yeah.
Could be down Carnaby Street tonight with Mick Jagger or something.
That's right,
that.
John Lennon.
That's the 65. Sort of look he's got.
That's right.
Going today.
Yeah,
you know
that's
I mean?
That.
Yeah.
What's old is new. Right?
Yeah, they're good. I mean, yeah, their tunes are, you know, it's a sort of mixture of different style, but it's definitely rock music, you know what I mean?
So how is it for you? Like, do you see him doing the same mistakes? Are you trying to give him advice? Does he listen to his dad?
Well, I don't have anything to do with his songwriting. He does that all himself. You know, I don't want him to be another Saxon, if you know what I mean.
Sure,
no, I just advise him on the business things. You know,
right.
Like they haven't signed a contract yet, but, you know, there's a few people being offering them things. So I'll just steer them, you know, so they're set up.
Kind of go through the filter a little bit from your experience.
Yeah, I don't want him to be ripped off. You know, we were ripped off back in the 80s. So
yeah.
I mean, like a lot of bands was. It seems to be part of the deal.
Sure, right, yeah, right.
You can have a record deal, but we have to rip you off. Oh, fine, okay.
How did you get ripped off?
Well, just the money goes missing, doesn't it? And, you know, they used to have, like, you know, manufacturing plants in Portugal and places where, you know, they were guarded by people with guns and things. So they couldn't really, back in the 80s, we couldn't really find out how many albums we'd actually sold.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the figures didn't add up to the amount of albums that were in the shops.
Like there was no sound scanner.
No, there was none of that. It was just like racks and racks in the vinyls, wasn't it? Vinyls and cassettes.
Right.
Which I've just done a deal, actually, for releasing cassettes on our next new album.
Really?
Yeah.
Back to that again.
Pure and simply because, you know, going back to, you know, Seb, my son, they do everything on cassettes.
Again?
They're playing tonight. They're going to, yeah, you go to
Argos
or a store, you buy a cassette machine for 15 quid, you know. Put the cassette in, click it on record, they record their entire set.
Old
school.
They
absolutely love it.
Yeah. You know? Which is funny because it's funny how all those things come back. Like, even with, you know, vinyl now is super popular again, as to where it was completely abolished. And now it's cassettes.
My prediction is cassettes are going to be big.
I get why.
Because they're easy to fit in your pocket. You get a little mono player. It converts stereo to mono really nicely. Uh-huh. You know, think about how many cassette players are in people's attics. Yeah, you know, yeah. With the vinyl player.
Right.
Because we all had the stack, you know. We had the radio. We had the cassette player. Sometimes two cassettes where you could record from one to the other.
Yeah.
You know, so all these Sonys that are in the attics, must be billions of them.
Do you think people are kind of getting sick of just downloading on a phone? Do you think that maybe the sound quality of that's bothering them? Because a lot of kids don't know the difference, but for us, when you listen to vinyl or even CD or even cassette, it's so much more clear.
MP3 compresses. That's how it works. You know, it compresses the files. So the music, you know, you can play the Rolling Stones on MP3, or you can play Slayer, and basically it's the same levels. You know, everything's more or less the same, because it's all condensed into that file, and that's how it works. And a lot of people listen to it on the phone, or they listen to it on a Bluetooth player, or, you know.
Right.
But even having said that, you know, I mean, the cassettes aren't great quality. They'll be about the same quality as an MP3 player. But you used to get, like, you know, Chrome cassettes and these high definition. You used to get Dolby with Dolby on there.
Yeah.
So I like it, me. You know, I'm not a big fan of retro stuff. I quite like moving forward. But I do like it when things come back into fashion.
Come back into vogue again.
You know, and you can sit there going, yeah, I've got a few of them in a big bag in the attic, you know.
The thing I hate about cassettes is, like, if there's a song you didn't like, you pretty much still had to listen to it, because you had to forward it and then try and guess where it ended.
Yeah, but that's where the twin deck one comes in.
Oh, I do.
You make a playlist.
You get
the scissors out and snip the songs out.
That's old
if you're
there.
Really geeky,
if you really
right?
know how to do that. Yeah,
a bit of sellotape.
When you're talking about new albums and albums, it's interesting because someone like a Gene Simmons says, "I don't want to make new albums anymore because you don't make any money off it and it's not worth it." But yet, Saxon still every 2 years.
Well, I mean, Twisted Sister said the same thing,
right?
You know, there are some bands out there who just want to play their old big hits and play festivals in front of, you know, tons of people,
right?
And just go out and do their thing. But for us, you know, we went through a bad period when the British metal thing was, like, quite down. So we had to survive. So we survived really by keep making records, keep writing songs, keep touring. You know, because we're old school. You tour on an album. You don't just tour for the money, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's good if you can do both.
Yeah.
But if you haven't got an album, you can't do that, can you? Mm. So, and the thing is with somebody like Kiss, they can't go and do, 100 shows in Europe. They just come and do a big festival or a big arena or something and then go to the next country. So, you know, their concept of touring is different anyway, you know, when you're that big.
Right, but for Saxon,
it's different, you know.
But for Saxon, you guys can go everywhere in Europe.
We play everywhere. We do play everywhere. Yeah. We play massive festivals. We play big shows. We play small shows. We just love touring.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're trying to bring it in a little bit on the next tour.
How do you mean?
Well, we're trying to do, like, you know, maybe bigger shows in less towns or something.
Gotcha.
So we can put in a bigger production.
Right.
You know, because I think people want to see the big lights and the big eagle. You know, sometimes the castle set from Crusader days. So, I mean, people want to see the production and that, you know, they will go and see it. But that doesn't mean to say we won't be back the year after and do, like, you know, some nice theater or club in the corner of the, you know.
You said, actually, I just quoted you last night. We're talking about some of the venues that we're playing on this tour and in the States too. Most of them are good, but they still get a couple really crappy ones. And I'll never forget you said when we toured in the States, which we'll talk about because it was great, was, you know, sometimes people don't come see you if you're playing in a shitty club because it's a shitty club.
That's right.
They're not going to come. That's a great theory.
Well, that's right. And also, you don't get a younger audience in those clubs because, you know, sometimes they're 21 or definitely 18. So, you know, and sometimes parents won't bring their kids to a club like that because it's a bit like hardcore.
Right.
You know, it's got a hardcore, you know, reputation.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying, you know, it's sometimes better if you're in a theatre or something that's a little bit, not sort of better, but just maybe the tickets, you know, sort of cover 14-year-olds and things like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then if people want to come and bring their family or young kids want to come and see the band, they can do. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, you know, say Fozzy, you know, you've got wrestling fans as well,
yeah,
who are quite young. they want to come and see you play in a band.
Right.
Sometimes they can't get in.
Right.
You know what it's like.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, particularly in America, it's difficult, you know, choosing that level. In Europe, it's a little bit different because they can segregate gigs sometimes. So you have like an area where people right. can't buy booze. You
yeah,
know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I noticed something. You guys have been touring the States quite a bit, and it had been a while. I think when we went out in 2013, you hadn't been to the States for a few years. Now it seems like every year you're going.
Well, we're there sometimes twice a year.
But there was a time, like, I don't think you had toured in the States a lot before 13.
That's right. I think that a lot of that was down to maybe record company, agent, management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't really clued in to that side of things. You know,
right,
the
right,
European
right.
thing was so big, mm-hmm. you know, let's just do Europe, you know. But we love touring the States,
mm-hmm.
you know. It might not be the home of metal, but it's definitely the home of rock and roll, right? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a great place to be, and American audiences are so fired up for all everything rock and roll, you know. It is a rock and roll absolute kingdom over there.
That tour that we had with Fozzy and Saxon and Fozzy, one of my favorite tours I've ever had, and I always tell people this, I have never insulted somebody with my best insults that I have from me to you and received the best insults from you to me.
I saved the best ones, mate. I saved the best ones for people that are bigger than you. Like.
Every morning
just
we get
like
up.
Just like a podcast, right?
Yeah. But that was such a fun tour, man. It was
it's good.
It was a long one. We bus
yeah.
shared.
Yeah.
We had a good time on that
We did
tour.
Have a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, we like to, you know, when you're touring, you can't be stressed too much because it's a stressful environment anyway.
Right.
Because you got to get on, you got to do this, you got to do VIP, you got to, you know, and you got to get out the gig. You can't get in before a certain time, so it's all rush. And, and everybody wants a sound check. You know what I mean? So you got to get on and off, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the first band that's on usually sound checks longer than they play. But, that, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah,
you know? That's
right.
Part of the course, isn't it? But, it's you know, you have to get into touring and you have to focus and be mentally prepared for it. But you have to have a good time, you know, with the boys, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah. Very
it's
important.
Like, it's like a huge gang of guys out on tour, you know, and it's like... It has to be very sort of, like you say, insulting, very work-like, you know.
Yeah.
Like it is, you know. It's not PC correct when you're on tour, mate.
I remember one time we played Vegas and a bunch of strippers came to see us. I took a picture with them. I said, Biff, see what this is? They're called girls. That's what you might see them at your show once in a while.
Yeah. But what did I say? They're my daughters.
Yeah. But then still to this day, the chicken story is still such a great story.
The chicken story.
Yeah,
is a great
yeah.
story.
Well, because you were mad that
no,
I had.
No, we weren't mad.
Well, you were asked. What happened?
We're pretending to be mad.
You walked in one day and were like, "How come you have chicken?" I said, "Well, because I put it on the rider." I said, "You can do it too. You're the headliner."
Don't believe a word he's saying. He did not put it on the rider.
I did so.
He had our tour manager, who was our tour manager actually. It wasn't the Coedline show.
Was that Rodney?
They were supporting, right?
Oh yeah.
So yeah, he had our tour manager. Fetch a chicken for him every night.
Yeah.
So one night we had a chicken which we ate and we put the skeleton of the chicken in his bag and took out his chicken, left it in the dressing room. And when he found it, you could have heard him 4 miles away, "Where's my f-ing chicken?" And we were laughing our asses off. Well, so since then, the chicken story has been a good connection between Saxon and Fozzy.
But then the last show you guys played was in Vancouver. I sent him out, same guy, tour manager, to get 5 silver platters and 5 chickens.
Right.
And we brought them on stage for you guys
you
doing
did, yeah.
Wheels of Steel.
I'm partial to chicken. You know, nothing wrong with chicken.
Do you remember the show we did in San Antonio? You remember the story behind that?
Yeah.
When we showed up in the... we were supposed to play a venue there, and the venue was a Halloween... They changed it to a Halloween haunted house.
Yeah, we changed it. We played it outside, didn't we?
Outside.
On the back of a trailer, wasn't it? We had some Christmas lights, didn't we, for the light show. And it was absolutely rammed, yeah.
2,500, 3,000, 4,000 people there.
But, you know, after it, the promoter said, there was only 1,500 in.
That's right.
But listen, but the thing is, we went. We were videoing the queue. As we came into the town, yeah?
Yeah.
So we videoed the queue. So our agent counted the queue, you know what I mean? And said, "No way. There's 2,000 people in that queue, mate." And, you know, people came after that. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Do you guys get a lot of that still to this day of promoters trying to pull that sort of stuff?
No.
Almost
at all. It just, you know, those outdoor things when somebody just set up the day.
Yeah.
They've got what they call rubber walls, haven't they? You know, they're just as big as you want them to be. You know what I'm saying?
And that, we literally had to basically build a stage out of nothing.
We did, and it rained.
To put on the show.
It rained.
Yeah, it rained.
I think the tour manager cancelled the show. Mm. And somebody phoned me at the hotel and said, the show's been cancelled. Your tour manager's cancelled. I was like, whoa, hold everything. Yeah. Stop. Went down there straight away. I said, we don't can cancel shows unless we say we're cancelling shows, right?
So, right. You know. I remember you. Like,
so we put it back on.
Yeah, like your attitude was the show will happen one way or another. This show is happening.
That's right.
You know.
We got electricity.
Yeah.
We got the guys here. You know. That's all we need.
Ended up being a hell of a show.
We're playing the dark. Don't matter. Yeah. People have got lights on their phones now. You know,
they can hear us.
It's fine.
What was your first tour of America? Do you remember that?
It was with Rush.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
On the Moving Pictures tour.
Oh wow! So that would be.
I still get 1980.
That would be what album was that for you? Power and the Glory or no? Before that?
No. It wasn't Power and the Glory. It was
the first. It would be
Wheel Strung Arm.
Oh, okay,
because they both came out at the same time in America, didn't they?
Oh, right.
But more or less. But yeah, we'd be Wheel Strong Arm. Mm. It was great. It was like, you know, 30 dates. It was good.
How was it for you coming to America the first time?
Oh, it was crazy. It was like sold out arenas, you know, 25,000. It's the first time I'd ever seen anybody put a cigarette lighter up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We did, I can't remember what song we did. We did a song that was balladish. You know what I mean? We don't do ballads, but it was balladish.
Yeah.
And all the lighters went up, you know. Actually, I think it was Dallas 1 p.m., you know.
Really? Are they during the slow part?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. The lights just went up. We were like, whoa.
That was a pretty cool thing.
We were like them, you know, spacemen on there.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That was a cool moment, actually. Me and Nibs, when we were in Dallas, went to that area where JFK was shot.
Yeah.
And it was just...
Grassy Knoll.
Yeah, Grassy Knoll, right? It was basically right in the same area. Yeah. Where did you write that song from, Dallas 1 p.m., being British guys, English guys?
Well, I remember it on TV, you know, 63, was it?
Mm-hmm.
That would be what, 12, something like that?
Yeah.
63, 12, 13?
Yeah.
12, 11, 13, something like that. Right. Anyway, I'm not doing the maths. But yeah, I remember seeing it on TV, and it came back to me later on when I was like thinking of lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things do, don't they, you know?
Yeah.
Some things you've put in your head, you know, and come back, you know, that's how it is.
I always like those intriguing song titles, though, like Dallas 1 p.m. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah,
it's interesting, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's cool.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this, rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
Talk about your new album a little bit now. Thunderbolt, right?
Yeah.
Another one that you mentioned when we went out, it was Sacrifice, and then after that it was Battering.
Battering Ram, yeah.
So yeah, every 2 years you guys are like clockwork on a new record.
Well, we like to do it every, you know, we like to start, we like to have a year and then start the next one, you know. Pretty similar to the last one, really.
Right.
In our collection of tracks, really.
And you work with Andy Sneap again.
Yeah.
Does he challenge you guys at this point, or does he just let you do what you want? Because he's a pretty cheeky guy, Sneap.
Well, the thing is, I let him produce this one, because, you know, I co-produced the last one.
Right.
Which meant I was there a lot.
Right.
But I let him do this one, basically. And, yeah, he did a good job. Did a great job, actually.
Does he push you?
He always pushes you, Andy, is, as long as you don't end up sounding like hell, you'll be fine, yeah?
the band hell, yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty unique. But, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, he has a great grasp of 80s bands as well.
Mm-hmm.
So although he does a lot of modern acts, he does tread the line quite well. I mean, he does a great job for us. I've not heard the Priest album that he's just done.
Right.
But if he's done as good a job on them as he has on us, then it's going to be a killer album.
Well, I'm sure he has, right? Because he did that with Accept. He did it with...
Well, Accept aren't a metal band, though. They are, but they aren't, are they? Accept are, like, a little bit different.
Hmm.
They're a bit more... they're a bit more, how can I put it? I can't really put it. They're a bit
heavy
more,
ACDC or
they're a
something?
Bit more, yeah, they're a bit more 80s, aren't they?
right.
Heavy ACDC, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're a bit, I think they're still trying to write a radio hit.
Gotcha, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? They haven't really grasped the whole metal thing, you know what I mean?
When you talk about a radio hit, and I'll get back to them in a second, a Sax never had a radio hit?
In Europe, yeah.
Which song?
Several.
Are these songs that people are just picking up the album and playing? Are they actually songs?
No, it's singles charts.
Singles charts,
TV,
right.
And all the rest of the kabamming.
Yeah.
Now, we had Wheels of Steel, 747, both top 20, I think.
Wow.
I think maybe 747 was top 10. Never Surrender was a big one. Bands Played On was a huge one.
Oh, okay.
Princess of the Night was quite a big single. Should I Go On? No, probably not. Look on Wikipedia, mate.
Yeah, look, just Google it.
We had a lot of hit songs. In America, I think we had a lot of rock stations. Mm-hmm. But I think the only song that got big airplay in America was This Town Rocks.
Really?
Yeah, I think purely because the radio stations liked to put it on, you know. This town knows how to rock. They liked it back then.
That's kind of how it was back then, too. DJs could just play whatever they wanted to play.
Yeah.
You know, just choose whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
What was that like for you when we've talked about this in the past? Like, I'm a big Saxon fan from the 80s era.
Yeah.
You know, starting with Crusader, but then kind of going through some of the more, I guess you'd say, was it the polished era or more of like the rock and roll gypsy and that sort of
stuff? Well, I just think the chemistry of the band changed for some reason after between Power and the Glory, Crusader, around that time. The chemistry seemed to change. I don't think really looking at it, I was writing any sort of different lyrics, actually. I'm still trying to sum up with catchy melodies, you know, like always. I'm not trying to blame the guitarists here, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
I think some of the riffs weren't as strong.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I think maybe we were struggling a bit to come up with really great sort of riffy songs, if you know what I mean.
Is that, were you signed to Atlantic at that point, or?
Yeah, we signed to Atlantic for Innocence and No Excuse.
Right.
Is that when you discovered us, right?
Yeah. Well, I actually came in Crusader.
All right, yeah.
And then Innocence was right after.
Yeah, that's right.
But you could see the difference in the songs. I still really liked it, but it's different. When you signed with that label back in those days, would they tell you we want some more radio style?
I don't think so. I think there was always you know, I think in some respect we were governed by other bands, which is not always good.
Mm.
Whereas in the early days we just did what we wanted, you know, what we felt was great, which is what we do now.
Right.
But I think in that mid period, I think, you know, because the grunge thing came strong, you know what I mean, and the American bands came strong, like Motley Crue and Poison.
Sure.
They all became huge.
Yeah.
You know, in that middle 80s period. I think it took away a bit from the British metal thing, and those bands were huge. Saxon fans, Priest fans, Motorhead fans.
Sure.
But I think they killed it for us a bit, and I think we probably tried to compete with them a bit.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, you know, like subconsciously, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're trying to,
we just thought that, you know, writing things like 20,000 Feet and Heavy Metal Thunder wasn't what people wanted anymore. Mm. But obviously we were wrong.
Yeah. But there was a lot of bands that kind of fell into that slot you're talking about.
Well, like, they probably fell into it more than we did.
You know? I mean, you guys pretty much kept it steady. Maybe there might have been one record, like, I think maybe the Destiny record
was kind of rough.
But yeah. They keep Rock the Nation is a great album, very heavy.
Yeah, it's very heavy. That's a great cool record album.
Yeah.
Recorded basically quite live, really.
Yeah,
great
really.
Producer.
Yeah.
Drunk a lot of the time. Great, even nevertheless.
We were just listening to Ride Like the Wind the other night from Destiny, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the best song on there.
It is.
Without a doubt.
It is, yeah. Yeah, there's even a song called Jericho Siren, but that one's okay.
It's not, Jericho Siren's not bad.
It's not bad, yeah.
You know, it's up there with, you know, Baptism of Fire and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of more rocking.
Yeah.
Who were you touring with at that point in time in the States? Did you do a lot of stuff?
Ourselves, actually.
Just yourselves?
Yeah, touring. We could still do pretty good gigs there, you know. I mean, they don't forget that the first headline tour we did was with Accept supporting us.
Oh, okay.
And a band called, was it Heavy Petting on first?
Heavy Petting, yeah.
And that was pretty much sold out tour. We did the Wharfdale and stuff. Quite biggish gigs, you know. the Wharfdale, Civic Center, San Antonio. So we were happening, you know, around 86.
Were you
84, 85. Yeah. You know, after we came off the Maiden tour,
I was just gonna say,
which was Pound the Glory, yeah.
Was that the British Metal Onslaught, they called that?
Yeah.
And that was Maiden's first arena tour, wasn't it?
Yeah, that broke on that tour.
Yeah.
And it should have broke us as well, but it should have half broke us.
But why did it half?
Because we didn't do the whole tour.
Oh.
We only did half the tour.
Okay.
We did the good bit, you know, it was a good bit. We did Midwest through the West Coast, but we didn't do the East Coast. But we were already pretty big in the East Coast. We could do two nights at Lemoore's there, you know. So
yeah.
We were pretty happening there. But it would have been nice to do the full tour.
But at that time, Maiden and Saxon in England were kind of almost at the same level.
Yeah, more or less.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, that Maiden Saxon tour is legendary.
Mm-hmm.
People still come up to me and go, "Hey, I saw you. Why, you know, Long Beach Arena. It was fantastic, you know." It must have been a great show to still resonate.
Would you guys all go out after the shows, or like hanging out after?
No, not really. We'd go out with, you know, we'd end up with some girls as usual. Go out partying somewhere.
Yeah. But that was the thing, though. It's like, it's funny when you go out with other bands too, a lot of times you do kind of just stay in your own little camps, right?
Well, the thing is, you know, those gigs are so huge as well. There's really no sort of backstagey thing. You sort of meet people when you're eating, you know, in the catering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right, Bruce. Yeah, all right. Yeah. But after the gig, you're usually doing your own thing with your own record company, your own management, you know, and your own PR thing. So you usually get whisked off to a club somewhere that's having like a Saxon night or an after show party.
Right.
You know, so we'd always be able to get there because we'd finished, you know.
And once
Whereas Maiden finished late, they never get there, would they?
You know? You guys already drank everything and taken all the girls.
Yeah.
But that time too was a big risk for them as well. Wasn't that like, once again, what we were talking about before, like we're going to put this in arenas. Oh, you'll never sell well in these
arenas.
That's right. And
then
that's
why that was such a great package.
Yeah,
very important. Both bands were really happening. I mean, you know, Pound the Glory was in the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that, you know, was it the Egyptian one? What was that?
A Power Slave. But I think that might have been Peace of Mind.
It was Peace of Mind on that show. It's a great album.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know? So both bands were pushing hard, you know. So, And rock radio then was just playing everybody. They were playing it all over the place, you know. So
when the new wave of British heavy metal was happening, did you know what it was? Like, were you realizing you were a part of it? Or is it something just kind of more looking back on it?
Yeah, we realized it was happening because we used to do quite a few shows with Maiden back in the day.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, we'd do like university shows and Maiden would be on and would be some other band headlining.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Maiden would be the support bands. And we did a bit of that, you know, around about.
Right.
You know, we'd go and see them. If they played the marquee, we'd go along and see them. Or, you know, we actually played a gig with Samson.
Hmm.
We supported Samson, actually. Hmm.
Samson and Saxon.
Yeah. So, you know, Bruce was singing for them.
Right. So you saw them kind of growing as you guys were
Well, I saw Bruce in Samson, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't... Actually, 3 or 4 years later, he was in Maiden.
Yeah. Well, another band that you did a lot with over the years was Motorhead, even up until Lemmy's passing. The Saxon and Motorhead were always kind of together.
Yeah, we're massively connected. I mean, it was the first British tour we did was with Motorhead on the Bonner tour.
Yeah.
And the second tour we did with Judas Priest in Europe on the British Steel tour. So we're quite connected historically with both bands. But Motorhead, you know, Lemmy really helped the band out in the early days.
He helped you guys
out of his way, yeah.
Kind of give you his blessing,
He sort of told the audience to buy our album, you know, basically. So, you know, it worked great.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to do that.
Mm.
He just loved the band, you know. He loved it.
You guys get along really well?
Yeah. I mean, we've been friends for a long time.
Because you were on that last tour in the States where they had to cancel a bunch.
Yeah, when he had to cancel some. We were going out in Europe, weren't we, when he died. It was the next part of the tour.
Was that hard, like every night kind of waiting to see whether Lemmy was going on or not as a band?
Yeah, it was upsetting, actually,
uh-huh.
because he was trying really hard, you know, to do the shows. And sometimes, you know, one was up in the Salt Lake City, was it?
Mm.
Up in the mountains where he got really bad with his breathing.
Yeah.
So he had to come off stage.
It's hard as a band, too, to kind of be waiting. It's like, it's canceled, guys, you know. If it gets canceled, you don't get paid, right?
Well... I think Lemmy sort of, you know, let us go on first, really.
So to make sure.
Paid, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Gotcha, yeah.
They never really cancelled many shows. They always turn up with the gear. you know, to try and put the show on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, man, he was, he and I got fairly close over the last couple of years of his life. And I was at his birthday party about 2 weeks before he passed away. Mm-hmm. And he was really gaunt, really thin. And,
yeah.
You know, it was funny because I tell the story all the time, and people were all doing these, like, great jams of all-star bands playing, and they had this big tribute on the video screen with, you know, I'm sure you were on it, and, you know, Kiss and Metallica and everybody giving all these accolades to Lemmy, and he was sitting in this kind of big chair reading a book.
Yeah.
He could give two shits.
He's like that, though.
Yeah.
You know, he was so down-to-earth, Lemmy. Mm-hmm. You know.
Most embarrassed by the whole adulation of it.
He's a northern lad, you know. Yeah. So, you know, he didn't... I think Lemmy liked to be famous. Mm-hmm. He liked the fame, but he didn't like anything else to do with it. He didn't like, he wasn't, he didn't really have that sort of ego thing. You know, I'm Lemmy, you know, you have to do this and this.
Right.
He liked meeting famous people. You know, this is what he liked to do. And he liked to play on different people's bands. He liked being friends with Slash and, you know, and Keith Richards and all this. And that's what he liked to do, mm-hmm. you know, and he liked to play rock and roll.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Right.
And he died basically doing what he liked, really. You know.
And you did, I'm not sure, was it at some kind of award show or something, where you sang for Motorhead, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I got most of them wrong, but it's the thought that counts, right?
Who played bass on it?
Nibs.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a funny story. Nibs learned Ace of Spades off the album, right?
Yeah.
And... he started it, you know, at that speed.
Yeah. Blum, blum.
So we played Ace of Spades. After it, Mickey was like, "God, that was fast." And he was just saying, "I just learned you off the album. That's the speed, man." Are you sure? He's going, "Yeah, I'm sure. That's the speed, right?"
But when you're talking about, like, legendary, you know, English rockers, I mean, in a lot of ways, Biff Bifford is now that Lemmy's gone, and obviously no one will ever replace Lemmy, but you're almost that guy now in a lot of ways.
So yeah, I suppose so.
You know what I mean?
You know, Rob's up there still, isn't he?
Halford's up there, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't really think about it, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think a lot of Motorhead fans, you know, have always been to come see us, and, you know, I hope that people find that connection, because there is a connection between Sax and Motorhead, mm-hmm. definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, our early thrash metal stuff, you know, that Lars likes, you know, that wouldn't be around if it wasn't for Motorhead.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that, all that fast playing, you know, it's you know, those are some of the bands we learned it. Because Motorhead were massive when we first started, you know, there.
Wasn't your drummer end up being their drummer or vice versa?
Yeah, for a year till Lemmy sacked him.
Oh, and then you took him?
What?
You took him after?
No, Lemmy took him after he left us, and then you sacked him. He told some stories about him. I was like, yeah, we know.
Now, how is it for you? You've had a pretty solid lineup for the last, gosh,
23 years. Yeah.
So that's those days of kind of band member switching are pretty much over for you guys.
Well, yeah, we got rid of the Spinal Tap element of the band, didn't we? So it's good, you know.
What's the Spinal Tap element?
Well, you know, Oliver in particular, you know, keeps saying the entire film's based on him. So he can have that if he wants. That's fine by me.
It was always,
if that's his claim to fame, then you know.
It was always bad in the 80s when there was a guy in a metal band that was bald. I always felt bad for him.
Well, know? That's Steve Dawson.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, the guy in Spinal Tap modeled himself off Steve Dawson, obviously.
Harry Shearer, the bass player?
Yeah, he modeled himself off with a mustache and everything.
Yeah.
So I can understand that. But, I mean, you know, there's so many things in Spinal Tap that are actually from other bands. You know, Sabbath with the Stone Age things, and there's all sorts of things, you know.
Was there any of it based on you?
Don't think so, okay. No, because they haven't got a singer, have they? It's a guitarist. Thing.
Right.
But I'm sure they would have done it if they had a singer, but it was a bit of spandex on there. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's a great film. It's a funny film.
Oh, it's classic, especially if you're in a band.
It's not a documentary, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a film,
yeah. You know
what I'm saying?
Especially if you're in a band, though, because that sort of stuff happens all the time. Have you had some Spinal Tap moments?
Oh, we're having one now, aren't we?
When you're talking about also too about your vocal style,
yeah,
I mean,
Do I have one?
Well, there actually is a style there, and you actually are in tune for that. But, man, like, watching you guys play, great live band, of course.
Yeah.
But, dude, I never saw you have a bad night. Ever vocally. I mean, I'm sure it's you might have, but every night it's there. You're one of those, not rare guys, but you're a guy like Dio.
I'll take rare.
Like rarefied air, like McCartney or Dio, that still has that tone and the power at your highly advanced age.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not as old as I think I am. Maybe my mother and father lied to me. And...
But it's just a natural genetic ability?
Yeah, just a natural thing, really, you know.
Do you do a lot of warm-ups?
No.
I remember that too. Nothing.
Nothing.
It's total natural.
Does that make you sick?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does.
No, I don't do any of the wow thing. Don't do any of that.
No. So you just go right on stage?
You just go right on stage, yeah.
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 It's amazing after that you could do that because that's not an easy thing to do.
It's not easy now.
You know? When you were starting, who were the vocalists that you looked up to? Or who did you...
Well, I was a bass player, you see.
Oh, okay.
Originally. So, yeah. You know, I didn't really give a monkeys about singers because bass players don't do that generally. Right. So, I think, you know, I mean, obviously I like singers like Robert Plant and but I would never even try to sing like Robert Plant, really. It's so unique, isn't it?
Well, you have a unique style, too. Like, nobody sounds like Biff Bifford, you know?
No, I understand that. Yeah. I don't hear it myself, but I do understand it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is with me, I'm a songwriter. So a lot of my vocal style comes from writing melodies, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if something's in a certain key, some singers will change it. You know, if a guitarist comes and it's in B, some singers will go, I don't like B. Oh, I don't like C. Mm-hmm. No, it's too high, or A. But me, I just sing in any key, so
it doesn't really, sometimes
it doesn't really make any difference.
Sometimes
to me,
they're in the same song.
But I do listen to it sometimes and think, well, if that song was a tone lower, you know, my voice would hit that really powerfully, not squeaky.
Right.
But you know what guitarists are like, they just write their riffs to what they're feeling like that day. You know, like, well, it sounds better in E. Yeah, but, you know, it's all the last 300 songs. They've all been in E, you know.
Right, yeah.
Variate it up a bit. Let's have a, you know, F. That's a good key nobody uses, you know.
Yeah. Who writes the majority of the songs for Saki?
Now, me and Nibs do.
Okay.
Yeah. Pure and simple, because Nibs's output is quite big.
Mm-hmm.
And... he doesn't seem to have any time off. He's like me. Mm-hmm. So me and him are like monsters of work. So we just, you know, work on the songs together. I mean, the boys play them, obviously, and put their bits in here and there. But generally, most of the nucleus of the ideas come from me and Nibs.
Let's talk about you being with Paul Quinn since the beginning of the band, the two original members of Saxon.
Yeah.
Very interesting, unique guy Quinny is. At first, I didn't know, half the time what he was talking about, and then you kind of have to slip into Quinn world.
Yeah, you have to go to Planet Slob or wherever he's from, and speak that language of it's a bit like Spike Milligan, actually. I don't know if anybody out there knows Spike Milligan.
He's
very zany humor.
Yeah.
And when he's telling the joke, he always ruins it because he laughs at it too early. Do you know what I mean? So... You just left there staring at an open, empty space.
Right.
Should I laugh or what did he say then?
You can't even give him the courtesy laugh because you're not sure where it's supposed to be.
No, you end up, it's a bit like talking to a French guy. He just keeps saying yes all the time. You know what I mean? If you don't know the language, you know, get into serious trouble.
But that's a long time relationship with you and him.
Pardon?
A long-time relationship.
Yeah. I mean, it's hot and cold, sweet and sour, you know, like everything is.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Do you guys make decisions together?
They're not really into that.
Yeah, just leave it up to
the
you.
The band aren't really into that.
Right.
They don't want to know about the business side of things.
So when you're talking about business side of things, and then we're talking about the record with Thunderbolt, and you're getting ready to go to a new tour, what's your idea? Do you still play the same places you want to play? Are you trying to expand into other places?
No, we're trying to expand. Everybody's trying to expand.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't want to be building a bloody, you don't want to be building an empire or anything, but you need to expand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole idea of it.
Right.
Know? So, yeah, you know, like next year, instead of playing, you know, the the Empire in Shepherd's Bush, we might do the Roundhouse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 700 people more.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
What about country-wise?
Countrywide, yeah, we're doing less shows, actually. We're doing less shows and a bit bigger, yeah.
Well, how was the tour with UFO in the States? You did two legs.
That was good, yeah. Yeah,
that's a good mix, right?
Pardon?
It's a good mix, like a good bill.
It's a great mix. It's like a 70s band and an 80s band, really.
Oh.
I mean, I think, you know, musical generations, they're like the one before us. Mm-hmm. I mean, the influence of massively UFO. You know,
sure. It's like, I think, what's their tagline? Your favorite band's favorite band.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Force It was one of my favorite albums for years. Still is. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Schenker's input into UFO. We toured with UFO in the 80s with Chapman playing guitar.
Oh, Paul Chapman, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, they can't remember it at all.
Was it hard when you
Hey, we toured with you in 1981, man. Really, did you? Yeah, but that's such nice guys, UFO. They're lovely.
You know. But that's another thing. Like, you talk, we mentioned Motorhead, you mentioned UFO. Like, Saxon was never known as, like, the band that's completely off the rockers, causing problems or drinking too much. I mean, I don't...
No, we were never hellraisers in public, anyway.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But no one in Saxon ever went to rehab?
No. We should have opened one. We should have invested our money in a rehab. We'd have made millions.
You guys were always into tea.
Well, so they said, but yeah, it was one of the things that we were sort of known for.
English tea?
English tea, yeah.
So when you went to the States, could you find it?
Yeah, you can get it now, yeah.
But I mean back then.
Oh, back then, no. We had to use the bloody English breakfast tea, the twining stuff. They pick between the rows.
Would you have to try and import the tea?
Pardon?
Import the special tea? Like from
Poland? I tried that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. You just end up drinking coffee, though, don't you?
Uh-huh.
And you just end up drinking coffee or wine or brandy or something else, you know.
What was the biggest difference even now between the States and England when you go over there?
I don't really know, to tell you the truth. I don't really. You know, people ask me this question all the time. Chris, you know, if you were to transport that audience to England or vice versa, I mean, I think American audiences like to make a lot of noise after the songs.
Mm-hmm.
European audiences like to make a lot of noise during the songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you're in America, there's not a lot of the hey going on, you know. Without prompting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In Europe, it's different, you know. But I think in America, if something happens with the lights, you know, or a guitarist comes to the front of the stage, there's a huge cheer in America. Whereas in Europe, it's like, eh, you know. We've seen that pause before.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You know, Americans like a spectacle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They really like the lights and the sound and the band to be, you know, larger than life. I think in Europe you can be a bit more punky. You know what I mean?
A bit more punk rock, right?
Yeah. It's just that. I mean, I love them both. Really, I love both things. But you have to, you know, I mean, you've done it. Mm-hmm. You'd have to mentally adjust yourself to European audiences, to American audiences.
But even that, it also goes like when you're talking about the size of the halls too. Like when you're talking about. You know, I think a couple of years ago, you guys headlined Wacken.
Yeah, and we've headlined a few times. We did.
Big production and big action going. I remember Quinny on a cherry picker going out over the audience.
Yeah.
And then you go from that to we played, I think it was like Spicoli's Rock Garden in Dubuque, Iowa.
That's so what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you just like...
It's rock and roll.
Just go and play?
Yeah.
You like doing both?
I like doing in between.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The big spectacle shows are fantastic if the audience are with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all great. But a little club can be special, you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, you've been there. You know what it's like.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, what's better, a rammed club or 90,000 people, you know, that aren't really listening?
Mm.
You know, you're on at 3 p.m. and
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just trying to queue up and waiting for the next band or something along those lines, you know, right?
Yeah.
What's your biggest country at this point in time?
I would say it's got to be between Germany, Sweden, or UK at the moment.
Hmm.
But America's coming up fast.
Really?
It really is, yeah. Bastion Ram did really doing, he's still doing really well in America.
That's great.
So, you know, I mean, the video's had a million and a half views, which is not normal for a band of our age.
Right.
So, you know, some of our vids are up there, really. And there's no women in it. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, you've still got to have at least two women scantily clad walking across the back of the stage, right? Back of the video. You know, I've noticed in your videos there's a scantily clad women in there.
Of course.
But, no, I think it's good. You know, it was shot it in a garden at night. Mm-hmm. You know, great.
But that's the way, because back in the 80s, you had to get on MTV. It was so important to get on MTV. Yeah. Now you just put it up on YouTube.
Put it up on YouTube and see if people like it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
actually, it's amazing what people like.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, I mean, all our videos with girls in have got millions. But some of the ones, you know, some of the ones that you think, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
But somebody told me that yesterday, Princess of the Night's won 8 million.
That's crazy.
You know, it's crazy. And it's done 9 million streams on Spotify. You know what I mean? It's a lot of streams, isn't it?
How is that for you, like, obviously being in the business for so long, and we talked about cassettes and vinyl?
Well, I made 15 quid on that.
That's what I mean, right? Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those guys that go after, you know, Spotify and...
It's all exposure, isn't it?
It's exposure. They should pay more money. You know, iTunes is better. You know, at least you pay 99 cents for a track, you know, so you get something. But Spotify, it's like, it's like you pay money in and you can download wherever you want.
Sure.
It's all right, you know, it's all right. I mean,
it's all just a way for your band to get more listens and views.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all right if you're somebody like, you know, Katy Perry that's getting, you know, 38 million downloads.
Right.
There's some serious money there, isn't there?
Just as we start winding down here, we talked about MTV. Was MTV pretty, was it important to try and get on MTV back in the 80s time frame? And did you?
I think it was important in that Middle Ages period, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I think it probably started to queue in around big time, 83, you know, Power and the Glory time, Crusader time. So, yeah, we did do video with producers that were getting...
Did you have any success at MTV?
A little bit, yeah. Just Let Me Rock was quite a big one.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Power and the Glory got a lot of play on that. Mm. We were running around in rubber suits for whatever reason. I've got no idea. But, you know, at least we were playing in a castle. Right?
Yeah, of course.
So,
right.
Yeah, you know.
That was kind of the 80s thing. If you were
I think our manager was a big weed smoker. That's the only thing I can put it down to. Or he took a lot of LSD or something, you know.
Just... But then there was always the ones like where you guys were riding the back of a semi truck, like
we never did one of them.
Was it with Rock and Roll Gypsy? Weren't you guys in the back of a truck or something?
Oh,
like that?
No, that was the Arctic thing. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought you meant the flatbed driving through town playing live.
Yeah, not that one.
We passed through that one.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
What was the other one? It was Rock and Roll Gypsy, and Back on the Streets.
Yeah,
that was one. It was like it looked like you shot them both at the same time.
That was great fun, though.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, we're just down in Spain with a huge film crew. It was like a film, a proper film, you know, catering and Cineflex cameras and gaffers and pullers and, you know.
It's amazing how much money they would spend. Oh, on
it was. I'm sure it was half a million quid, you know. It was great, you know.
And of course, that comes right. People think like, "Oh, this is great," but it's coming right out of your
pocket. Yeah, I mean, the manager and producer, director had helicopters scouting sites, and it was already there. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It was like Clint Eastwood's sort of, you know, that spaghetti western thing. There was that, and there's another one over the hill from Conan.
Oh, okay.
You know, I wanted Conan, but they wanted the thing. But they had to have a helicopter to find it.
Oh, you wanted to do a Conan video?
I wanted to do it in the Conan set, right? Oh. It would have been cool. You know?
Just and that back in those days, like I want the Conan site.
Yeah,
I want
with the big
full dollar site,
the Aztec temple.
Just amazing how much money you're spending on all this stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, last final question is: what's your favorite song from Thunderbolt? Like that you're excited to start playing live?
Well, I can tell you about a couple of tracks. Do you want an exclusive?
Please.
I don't know if I should give it you. Or not.
Please, Biff.
Yeah.
I promise I'll give you some chicken.
Pretty please.
Pretty please.
Okay. Only if you stop riffing up my moves live, okay?
Okay. Am I doing that now? Which am I
I've seen it on
the jumping up and
people
down?
Keep sending me.
Oh, come on.
He's getting the audience clapping and everything.
Oh, just getting the audience clapping. Wow. I think we stole that from Elvis.
He's doing I've done a duet with Johan from A Man of Mouth.
Oh, nice.
One of the tracks.
That's cool.
That's it.
That's an exclusive. What's the track called?
I'm telling you.
Oh, okay, well... Well, look out for that. Look out for the nameless song.
Actually, it's called Predator.
Predator.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Mm.
That's good. That's. I mean, they got a lot of steam right now.
Pardon?
They got a lot of steam.
Oh, yeah, they're
right
great.
Now.
We're huge fans of theirs. They're great guys. Mm. You know, and they're big, big Saxon fans. They're from Sweden.
Right, okay.
You know, back in the 80s, we were bigger than sliced bread there. Really? It was our biggest country.
You mentioned that was one of your biggest.
Yeah, we went there with no idea. Mm. You know, we went there from playing Hammersmith, you know, 3,500 people to Sweden, 12,000 people, two nights. It's like, what?
With no idea.
Yeah, no idea.
How does that even happen, right?
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was like crazy. It was like just pop stars or something going on there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just nuts. You know, they just loved us.
I guess for whatever reason, there's just certain...
Yeah, we just hit that, you know, school kid generation, and they just took us on as their favorite band. And all those bands in Sweden, you know, were all huge Saxon fans when they're growing up, whether they were like 6 years old or whether they were 12, you know, they all remember Saxon.
Right, they knew the band those days. From those days, right.
Pretty much like America, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, all those guys who became, you know, big in the middle 80s were huge fans of Maiden Saxon from the 80s period.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think one of
them. They got our albums, you know, we were like the biggest cult band on the planet. Mm. You know, I love this band, you know.
Well, the famous.
I remember Gene Simmons telling me that he was doing some band, I can't remember who it was, Warren to somebody, I can't remember,
mm-hmm.
and they were listening to how the guitars did different riffs on Left and Right, you know, how we did that, you know.
Wasn't Metallica's first, basically one of their first gigs opening for Saxon?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, was it the
Whiskey? And Lars came to see us in Brighton on the, must have been the Denim and Leather tour.
He used to do that. We were, like I told you, I saw him in Birmingham the other night, and the guys from Diamond Head were there. And he stayed on Brian Tatler's couch when he was 15 and followed Motorhead around. And do you remember a guy like, do you remember a kid like that? Did he make himself known?
Oh, we had loads of people. A lot of press guys, early press guys used to hang around with us quite a lot.
Mm.
You know, getting the booze and the girls.
But you don't remember a little kid called Lars coming around?
No, he didn't. Right. He didn't hang out with us.
Yeah, probably tried.
But he might have done, but we were playing pretty big gigs then, so he probably couldn't get back to see us, I would imagine.
How does it feel for you when the biggest metal band, basically maybe of all time besides Sabbath, are huge Saxon fans? They used to play Heavy Metal Thunder before the show every night.
They did. Don't they do that anymore?
They've used It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll now.
We use that. They've ripped that off us.
Well, you better call them.
No. He can do that.
You don't have his number anymore.
Yeah,
you have to call his handler.
I do.
It's funny.
In my phone.
We were hanging out the night after the show.
He never answers, but you know.
We were after hanging off the show, and it was kind of, everyone was talking, so I just put on some music. I'll put on the Wheels of Steel album, and we're talking for a bit, and Lars is like, hey, man, I love Saxon, but I've been listening to pounding metal all night. Can you please turn it off? I said, wait till I tell Biff. He's not going to be happy.
I'm not going to be, because we play Seek and Destroy.
Oh, yeah?
I'm taking it off.
Last question. What's your favorite?
That new AC/DC song.
Yeah,
when you got to the top, it's a long way down, right?
That's right. It's a long way down when you're at the top. What's your favorite song, or some of your favorite songs to sing live still to this day?
To sing live?
Yeah, for you.
Oh, they're all pretty good to sing live because I wrote most of them, you know, melodically. So, yeah, Princess is always great.
Mm.
I like the ones the crowd sing along to, you know. And, I mean, Battering Ram's pretty cool. You know, you only need, like, if you're playing in front of 10,000 people, you only need 1,500 people to sing the first chorus, and then everybody's singing
gets
the next
into
one.
It, yeah.
You know, that's the secret of a great hook, you know. Mm-hmm. But, all of them, really. I don't really have a song that I don't... I mean, some of the stuff's quite high, like some of the newer stuff, like Terminal Velocity and stuff. You know, it's quite high. It's in B. But I quite like it, you know, screeching along up there.
You still handle it, no problem.
Yeah, still handle it, yeah. I mean, when... If you're halfway through a 30-day tour or something, you know, your voice can get gravelly, but you can still hit it. You just have to learn how to work between your sort of diaphragm voice and your head voice.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds really weird that, but you know, you have a head voice, which is more like a Bon Scott sound,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a diaphragm voice, which is more like a not operatic, but it's more like vibrato-y sound. And you can switch between them.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it as long as I have.
Since the 30s. I remember you said even at first when inner ears started becoming in vogue that you didn't like it at first because it was
No, I do. I half and half now. I sort of use it a bit and then take it out. My hearing's getting really bad at the moment. You know, it can mess up your pitch a little bit, but yeah, you know, it's all right. It's
I find if you leave one in and one out, you can still get the live ambiance.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, take one in, one out, and then just maybe, you know, put one in if I'm singing something that's softer. We don't do that a lot, but, you know, if I'm singing sort of, you know, some of the newer stuff like Queen of Hearts, it's quite low octave. So, you know, it's better if you've got, because then you end up shouting.
Right.
You know, rather than singing. So it's good to have that closeness of in-ear.
Do you still...
Because, you know, I've bought my in-ear set up like a hi-fi. It just sounds like a hi-fi, you know. It sounds so brilliant. I've got echoes on there and compressors and all sorts.
I call it the cream. You got to have the cream on it.
Yeah.
Give me some cream. Do you do a lot of...
Something else, but I'm not...
Do you do a lot of shows in a row when you're on tour?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
Like six on one.
I mean, back in the day, we used to do like 16, 17 shows. But no, I can do six.
Yeah.
And sometimes do nine. You know, if there's a couple of days off. You know what I find the really, really easy thing to do is if you book in a tour, book one on, one off, two on, one off. Just after that first initial gig, your voice sort of goes into shock and a day off is great because then it relaxes and it all heals a bit and then you can do it then, you know. It's just how you set up the tour. So we always try to do that. If you notice,
one on, one off.
Yeah, one on, one off. The guitarists hate it, right?
So do the managers.
They want to do like 48 shows.
Yeah, that's right.
Get the money and go home, right?
That's right.
But for a singer, one on, one off, two on, one off.
And then
you set up then.
And then go six in a row or whatever.
Then you can do it, yeah.
Interesting.
It's good then because your voice is used to it. It's good, you know.
I should check that out because...
The other thing is, try not to talk. I know it's bad saying that because we've been talking for at least 5 hours, haven't we?
I think so.
But, you know, don't talk in the day because that can really mess up your larynx because you're using your lower tones all the time.
Right.
So, you know, when you come to sing, it can be a bit like... Because you've used up your allotted time that your voice has.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of singers don't do interviews. A miserable bastard is not doing interviews. Sometimes it's because they don't want to talk all day.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, you just want to relax, drink a bit of juice, you know. You know, my juice is bad. I didn't want that. But, you know, a bit of warm tea is good, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, a bit milky. No, not milky stuff either.
Yeah,
but, you know, there's not much you can drink.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of honey.
I know some singers that just drink hot water.
Yeah, hot water's all right, but warm water.
Yeah.
I mean, wine's okay to get rid of the phlegm off your throat. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes it away.
Right.
And also gets you a bit drunk, which is cool.
you sound much better that way.
There's certain things you can do to help your voice, and not talking a lot through the day is one of them.
The best way to do it,
because, you know, in that 12-hour day when you're awake, when you're singing, that hour... Hour 30, 2 hours is your allotted voice time. So that the more you do before that takes it away from the time. Yeah.
It's hard not to talk, though, especially for guys like us.
Well, it's hard for you to not to talk.
Biff, it's been awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, cool.
I'll send you some chicken.
Yeah.
Where's my chicken?
I'll eat it.
Thanks again to the legendary Biff Byford. The new Saxon album, Thunderbolt, is out now. You can get it on Amazon or iTunes, wherever you buy music. Produced by Andy Sneap, who now, incidentally, is in Judas Priest, replacing the ailing Glenn Tipton. So there you go. Everything works out great. And if Biff has his way, hopefully he'll get a chicken every single night on the Priest tour and every single night on their headlining tour. The song that we made up when Biff was always complaining about the chicken was... I want chicken. Give me chicken. I love chicken. Digga, digga, digga. I want chicken. I love chicken. I need chicken. Digga, digga, digga. Give me chicken. I love chicken. Where's my chicken? Digga, digga, digga. Chicken. Chicken. I need more chicken. Yeah, boy. Great tour with Fozzy and Saxon back in 2013. And once again, Thunderbolt available right now. And also Judas is available right now. You can stream it on Spotify. Buy it on iTunes or Amazon and check out the new video for Painless on YouTube. Almost 1 million views in less than a month. And make sure you come see us on the Judas Rising Tour 2018 starting next Wednesday, February 28th in New Orleans. We go March 1st, Houston, March 2nd, Dallas, March 3rd, Lubbock, March 4th, El Paso, March 7th, Tucson, March 8th, Phoenix, March 9th, San Diego, March 10th, Los Angeles, March 11th, Las Vegas, March 13th, San Francisco,
San Francisco. Did you drove or did you flew? March 17th, Portland. March 16th, Seattle. And that's the end of the first leg. We've got a whole second leg with lots of other shows. All shows available at FozzyRock.com. Get your tickets now and get your meet and greets as well, too. We got a crazy amount of meet and greets sold. Some of the shows are almost sold out. I know that New Orleans is almost capped. San Diego's sold out. New York City's probably going to sell out. So if you want to come see Fozzy VIP, you get a mini concert to yourself, just you and the other VIPers. We'll meet you, we'll greet you, we'll retweet you, we'll sign your stuff, we'll take pictures. Whatever it is you want to do, we'll be there. FozzyRock.com. Check that out now. And speaking of live shows, I'm bringing the Words of Jericho back to the UK in the spring. Those are my spoken word shows. May 21st, Glasgow. There's still some tickets left. May 22nd, Manchester. That one sold out clean in 7 hours. That's all gone. May 23rd, London. Still some standing room tickets left. Get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. And of course, it's not too late to come hang out with Fozzy on the Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We set sail October 27th, and for as little as $150, you can reserve your cabin at chrisjerichocruise.com. And remember, once you book your cabin, your price includes everything. All the concerts, comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greet, autograph signings, the Sea of Honor tournament, wrestling matches at sea, all inclusive. Your food is free as well. Only things you pay for on the ship are alcohol and gambling, and you'll be able to hang out with everybody, including me and this crazy lineup of guests just announced today. Kenny Omega will be aboard the Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, wrestling on board the ship. That's huge. The greatest in the world today will be there. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler are hosting. SoCal Val, special cruise director, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Conan Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms from Keeping It 100, Raven, Tim and Dave from Beyond the Darkness will be scaring the pants off you. Unprofessional Wrestling Show with Colt Cabana and Marty DeRose will be making you laugh your pants back on. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Killing the Town. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer making you laugh your collective asses off of some of the greatest comedy you'll ever hear. Jim's also going to be rocking with a Loud and Rowdy featuring Steve Brown and PJ Farley from Trickster. Busted Open Radio is going to be there. Dave LaGreca, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, The Cherry Bomb, Shoot to Thrill, Blizzard of Ozzy. Fozzy will be there playing three sets. Painless is at number 22 this week. We got another top 20 hit in our hands. And of course, the pièce de résistance, Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Young Bucks will be there. The villain, Marty Scurll. Cody will be there. The Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Delirious, Cody's gorgeous wife, Brandy will be there. Cody will be there. And we'll be announcing more talent. How much more can we get? Oh, my goodness. All right. And he's speaking of big talent. Coming up this Friday, it's the debut of my old friend Taz will be here on Talk is Jericho. We're going to discuss everything Taz-worthy. It's going to be a great show. Taz knows how to work the radio. He's a great guy. I've known him for years and years and years. Don't you dare miss that. Thank you so much to Biff Byford. Go check out the new Saxon, and we'll see you on Friday for Taz. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs to the big yeah boy.